Welcome to the Stop Faking Fine podcast, a show that will empower you to finally show up for yourself while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault. Your life is 100% your responsibility. It's time to stop faking fine.
It's a big day. I am so excited to have been part of an anthology of inspirational stories from women who have bounced back from immeasurable loss. The book, which is already an Amazon pre-order bestseller, comes out today. I wanted to tell you about it here because it all started on this podcast with the interview you're about to hear. The conversation about grief and bouncing back after loss eventually led me to being part of this book. I hope this episode helps anyone suffering from loss. And if you want more inspiration, grab the book, And Then She Bounced Back. It's available on my website at danalewis.com.
Welcome back to the Stop Faking Fine podcast. I'm your host, Dana Lewis. And today I am so excited to have my friend, Maya Taylor, with me. Maya and I met on social media and it instantly had a heartfelt connection. Maya is the CEO and founder of Widows Do Bounce Back. She is also a best-selling author, speaker, and certified life coach. Bouncing back, that's a phrase that we use with relative ease. But yet the actual process of bouncing back is anything but easy. In today's episode, we will dive into action steps for how you can bounce back, grow in yourself, and show up in the way that you desire to. Hi, Maya.
Hi, how are you?
Oh my gosh, I am so just, I'm like giddy to have this conversation with you. I just can't wait to talk. So thank you so much for being here. You guys, I just want to share, widowhood is not for the faint of heart. And Maya, let's roll back your story a little bit. Widowed at 27.
Yeah.
I mean, prior to becoming a widow myself, I really associated that word with older age.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about widow at 27, can you share a little bit more about your story and how it all unfolded?
Yeah. So I will agree with you. I definitely felt like widowhood at that age anyway. I felt like it was for more seasoned wives. Mm-hmm. it was definitely a bewildering experience and also a bit alienating because those seasoned wives had different needs and issues and methods to their madness than I would at 27 with two small kids. But that story was such an unexpected, I mean, you would think that, oh, you know, was there a car accident? You know, did, you know, what happened? And it was absolutely, he tripped and fell and died. Like, who does that? Exactly. Who does that? He would think that was hilarious if I told him that, like, yeah, you totally tripped and fell and died. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't like athletic, but like he was, you know, very healthy, you know, vegan, like this young guy. And he was 5 years older than me. So he was 32. So he was running backward in a relay race. It was Easter Sunday. So he was running backward in a relay race with all the other kids outside. And, you know, I'm inside with the baby because, you know, how mommies do. We're not going to go and get dirty with you.
No, not at all.
Give me the baby. And I was, you know. So at that time, my youngest was barely walking. So I was like, oh, yeah, we'll stay inside. So my six-year-old's out there with him. They're having a ball. And then suddenly he comes running in the house. And we are, mind you, out in King William, which is in Virginia, which they call the Sticks. It's an extremely, you know, rural area. That's where his family was from. And, you know, they're out there playing. He comes in running. Mommy, you know, he's going to die. He's going to die. I'm like, who are you talking about? And he's hysterical. So he doesn't say who at first. And I'm thinking, I look out the window and I'm thinking, oh, that's his cousin. His wife will go out there eventually. He's probably fine. And a couple another minutes go by and he's like, Mommy, he's going to die. And I'm like, who are you talking about, baby? And he's like, Dad. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, somebody hold my baby. And I go out there and I see, and he actually is laying in the grass and, you know, he's got this head injury and no one knows what to do. We've got like, you know, towels under his head trying to staunch the bleeding. And within a matter of maybe 30 minutes, he was gone. We are calling the ambulance. They're telling us stop calling because, you know, instead of walking us through what to do, they're saying stop calling because they're on their way. There's nothing more they can do. So they showed up about 40 minutes later, but at that time he had already done all the scary things you can think of, like when you're watching TV and you see people like, you know, lose consciousness and start foaming at the mouth and, you know, all of that, all the most scary things you can think of, like he does those things. And by the time they get there, he's, you know, unconscious and I know he's gone. And no one else around me is kind of registering that he's gone. They're like, oh, you know, he's passed out. He's going to be fine. Nobody can fathom that this is, you know, the end of the story. And at that time, I definitely felt like there was a presence missing, like something had happened. I wasn't like, you know, a voodoo priest or anything. So I like know any, I wasn't extremely supernatural, but I felt like I felt him leave. And I'm hysterical at this point. I mean, like losing it was mild. And, you know, I tried to get into ambulance. I passed out trying to get into the ambulance. I was like, part of me was conscious enough to be like, there is no way I can sit next to this man and watch him die. I don't have it. Whatever it is, I don't have it. So yeah. I, you know, felt my knees go out and somebody caught me and I found myself riding behind them, you know, the ambulance. And, you know, I noticed they're not driving very fast. We're going to the furthest hospital in the world. And I can see through the window. The door has a window on the back of the ambulance. And I see everybody jump up all at once, do some things. And then everybody sits down and starts having a conversation. So I'm like, he's gone. And I didn't really accept it until we got to the hospital. We get to the hospital and they've got a sheet over him. And I'm like, well, I know what that means in the movies. You know, that means he's gone. And I'm like, can y'all tell me something? And they're like, you can't be here. Go in the waiting room. So another 2 hours later, they come out and they say, and in my book, I had to detail this conversation because it was the craziest thing that the kid said to me. The nurse, she says, we were able to restart your husband's heart. Unable. How do you make that mistake? That mistake of all mistakes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the book, I call her nurse bitch. Sorry. Yeah. But sorry, not sorry. You know. But yeah, like it was an amazing slip up. And then, you know, after that blow, she asks me, you know, because I'm sunk into the floor right now. I've become one with the dust bunnies. And that's just my life at the moment. And she goes, oh, don't sit down there. It's dirty. Okay, lady. Like you've done your job for the day. Go home.
Yeah. Like, I'm over here. Well, let's like talk about that for a hot second. Like I also listened to my husband take his last breath mm-hmm. and it's all the things that you see on TV. Mm-hmm. It's all real. I'm mm-hmm. certified in CPR and they talk about a death rattle and it is real. Mm-hmm. Like that's a suffocating layer of grief and shock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never stop reliving it.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those moments, they never go away.
Yeah. Do you find with that suffocating layer, like, do you find yourself thinking about it?
Yeah. And the loneliest part about thinking about it is 13 years later, which is it is for me, no one has your back on this anymore. They're like, you know, you can't share this with anybody anymore because they're like, oh, you're over it. You know, you repartnered, you're fine. And so it is extremely isolating to still have these anxious thoughts and these old, you know, memories that are haunting your brain because not only are they attacking you at strange times and randomness, they also come at you when, you know, you're worried about your kids or worrying about someone else. It's a trigger for you all the time. And you're just like, oh, here's this moment. Thanks. And I can't share with anybody because they're going to absolutely not treat me the way that I need to be treated or support me the way I need to be supported because they figure I should be over it by now. So,
yeah. Especially because you've repartnered. They're like, oh, that chapter is closed. Girl, you fine. You're mm-hmm. moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep,
and you do move forward and you move through grief, but it's always an underlying toe that's there.
Yes.
Like for someone that's going through that now, like what lesson have you learned or what advice can you share about those moments?
I have learned that bouncing back, as I call it in my book and my little theme as the bounce back widow, is a constant fall down seven times, get up eight type of deal. It's not a, oh, I'm finished and I'm healed now. There is no finish line. There is no, oh, you're married and repartnered and all the things that, you know, people assume of me as a coach. Oh, I can't wait to be where you are. You're all healed and hunky-dory. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a thing. I can, you know, healing is a process and it's an ongoing thing. And the bouncing back is learning something about yourself and about what you're capable of through that trauma. And when it comes to you again, which it will, you use what you learned. That's all it is, you know, and anybody sitting in those spaces of being constantly triggered, you have to bring with you the fact that you made it through the last trigger. And maybe if you learn something while you made it through, apply it this time, because yes, you're going to be okay. And the biggest traumatic feeling in those triggers is, am I okay? So being able to answer that for yourself because of the last time you answered it is what you take through these moments.
Oh, that's so good. And it is like, you are the bounce back widow. I love that. And I love the name and I love what it represents, because we're constantly falling in every memory. Yeah. What some people will therapeutically call it a relapse or whatever you want, however you want to title it, they're thoughts and feelings and they're real. And you're going to fall down seven times, but you're going to get up eight, which is amazing. And I love the name of your private community, Finding Hashtag Next You. Like, because that's exactly what bouncing back is. It's finding that next version of you. And I think that that looks a little bit differently for each one of us. We talk about the seasoned wives, seasoned mothers versus, I mean, my children were also very little. They were 6, 8, and 10. So same, like no community, every community is more seasoned wives. How did you really resonate with this, finding your next you? How did that start for you?
For me, it was trying to be two different people at once and failing miserably, you know? So when I first became widowed, it was like, you know, I got to deal with my kids. I got to deal with my house and all of the woes and craziness that comes with becoming a sudden single income earner and, you know, all of that. So when I got to work or when I was in circles of friends, I didn't want to be her at all. I'm like, I'm over it. I'm sad enough. I want to be somebody else. And in building and being this other person, I realized I was living a double life. I'm suppressing things and they're leaking into each other. And, you know, where I'm bursting into tears with my friends, or I'm having an isolating moment at home where I'm like throwing a tantrum and going in my room by myself. Like, you know, these two people are not functioning together. And so I had a counselor at the time. I went through several, but this one, I love her so much. God rest her soul. She actually did pass away 3 months after we really got into things, which sucked. But she told me that, you know, in life, you can literally build a step, a ladder to whatever it is that you want to be. And the thing that's missing about that whole, you can be anything you want to be, are the steps. That's all. You know, I'm like, it, you know, yeah, right. If I wanted to, you know, be Beyonce, I would have by now. And
I'm missing a few moves. I'm missing just a few moves, but yes.
Right. I'm not necessarily all the single ladies. So it's like, and what we clarified there was that, you know, when you start to really detail what it takes to get to these steps, your brain starts working. It goes, oh, well, I can call this person, or I know that person, or I can do this, I can get this degree, or I can do, and you start to build the steps. And she was like, you know, just build it, you know, whatever it is, map it out. If you've got to make these steps, what does next you look like? What is her hair like? What does she smell like? What is her favorite song? Where does she go? The details are what matter, because the details are what trigger your brain to start saying, oh, well, you know, I could do that. These are different ways I could do that. I wanted to be more athletic, but I wanted to hang out with the boys. So I was like, well, we could do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, that's cool. And I could be a cool grandma one day and say grandma could kick some ass. You know, so
with the ninja hands, you gotta have the ninja hands with that.
Yeah, and that was fun to learn. And it was, you know, basically just building this, you know, this Build-A-Bear, this next version of myself that wasn't me being different. It was me being more me. It was me achieving goals that I had about being closer to my kids, being a better mom, being a better person, you know, expanding into this space. Because when you become widowed, there's a big hole there now where your husband used to take up this space. And now, even though we're tempted to put new things into it, the only thing that really helps you get through it is to grow yourself so that you can fit into this space now. And that was what I was determined to do, is to grow in those areas so that, you know, the lessons I learned from putting other things into those holes, yeah. I could, you know, I could definitely grow, in, you know, instead. So building Next You was about being this next version of me, because not just I couldn't exist in two places, but I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't have, you know, this, you know, I thought I did as a wife. I'm like, oh, I'm Jason's wife, you know, oh, I'm a mom, you know, I'm this and I'm that. But without him, it was kind of humbling. And, you know, I got down on myself too, a bit depressing, because I really couldn't answer the question. I'm like, I'm something, you know, I just don't know what.
I first of all, my husband's name was Jason also. So that's another reason why I love you. But it's so true. You lose your identity like that. And all of a sudden you're like, who am I? I'm somebody.
Where do I belong?
But I am not sure. And I no longer belong here or here. But I'm still the mother to these amazing children that I love with my whole heart. So now... And you don't want to say like, I'm just a mom, but you're like, well, I'm a mom.
Yeah.
And it is human nature. I want to talk a minute about stuffing other things into that giant hole that's in your heart, because it's almost like that's what's easiest to do is to just shove other things in that hole. And when you do that, I think it delays your healing or your ability to grow past that.
It does. And it also opens up the avenue of second heartbreak, where if that thing doesn't work out, now you've got to deal with it rejecting you too. And you feel extra alone and extra broken. And a lot of us, once we get past the idea of, you know, okay, well, my husband was the only man in the world, then we get into this area where we're like, well, I want to be loved again. And, you know, we tend to jump at the first thing that looks like it might sort of be love with one eye closed and standing on one leg, you know? And we realize the hard way that shoving things into that hole, not only is it going to be hard to get them in, it's going to be really hard to get them out.
And that's good. Say that again for the people in the back.
I always use that as the puzzle piece that looks like it might fit, but it doesn't really. And you're jamming it in there like, this is going to fit.
Yeah.
And when, you know, it's hard to get it in, it's already hard to get it in, but it's even harder when you have to yank it out and realize, this piece doesn't fit. That's your heart right there. That jagged piece that you're jamming things into. Pulling things out is even harder. So that second heartbreak is not a game. And as a coach, I deal with that all the time, where they're like, you know, I think this guy is the one, he's my next. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, you're not going to listen to me. You're not. So, okay.
We'll circle back on that in a little bit.
We'll circle back. Yes. And they come back and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so heartbroken. I was already down. It kicked me while I was down. I was like, yeah, I'll just lay in the carpet and make carpet angels with you, because it sucks. It does.
Yeah. It does. I mean, you have helped thousands of women through your programs and courses. Like, do you think that this is the biggest thing that holds them back from finding that next you? Or what is the biggest struggle that you think people have that holds them back?
I think it's one of the things, but it's the relationship piece and putting things into the hole is not really the biggest problem, because the biggest problem is not knowing what to put in the hole in the first place. And it's not knowing what your core values, and I use core values as the cornerstone of everything I teach. First, we got to figure out who you are. What are your core values? You know, for me, it's, you know, I call it Maya-ing the mess out of the day. And it's because the things that make me happy are these four. They're these four core values. It's being hopeful, helpful, productive, and creative. If I can be those things, I feel like I've won the day. It doesn't matter what I did. And feeling good about who you are is part of the confidence it takes to begin to move forward, to begin to feel like there's going to be a positive outcome in this whole moving forward idea, because the fear is that if I try something new, if I do something else, if I love again, it's just going to fall apart. What's the point syndrome? So I think the biggest issue with moving forward is not having the confidence to answer the question, what's the point? The point is you. The point is your, you know, what you're
doing. The point is you. The point is you. The
point is you. And until people feel worthy of that space in that sentence, and they can actually say what you is to them, you know, what you are, what you is.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah.
Yeah. Until they can say that, they have no answer. So they're like, I don't know what the point is, you know? So.
Yeah. And then once you find that, there sometimes can be a strange guilt around moving forward. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So how do you help people? Like, what do you say to that guilt once you found happiness?
Guilt is a form of, I'm not going to say low self-esteem, but it's a form of saying that, you know, being your own audience, basically being the biggest critic for other people. You know, half the time people are not even interested in your life. They don't care what you're doing. They are so busy worried about what other people think of them. They are not worried about you. But in your mind, you are in a fishbowl, and the tiniest comment, the, you know, the most flippant, you know, insensitive something somebody could possibly say, it burns to the core and you feel like, oh no, I'm not allowed to do this because these people are going to judge me. And really and truly, if your happiness lies in the thing that you're worried about, then, you know, you should not have, you know, you shouldn't worry. You shouldn't care what other people think. But the fact that you do means you don't believe in it. You know, you don't really believe that you're capable of doing this, and you're giving yourself an out. You're saying, oh, well, you know, I can't be in another relationship because everybody's going to think I'm widowing. Everybody's going to think I'm, you know, I'm out here giving everybody my sexy ankles.
And, yeah.
And I can't have that. So, well, I won't date. If that actually changes your mind, the guilt, then you still have some work to do on why you want to do this thing in the first place. Yeah. But once you have defined your why, and they always, you know, in network marketing, they say the why that makes you cry. The reason they say that is because if your why is strong enough, your will is there.
Yeah.
You know, you're not worried about, you know, what other people are thinking or whatever. So building their why is where I begin when people are feeling guilty about things. Why do you want to have another kid? Why do you want to be married again? Why do you want to go back to school? Why do you want to move forward? If the why is because I'm a mess, then yeah, go with that.
Yeah.
That's your why. That's strong. So go with that. And then you don't see, you know, all of the naysayers. It's like, so what? You know, this is breaking me. I got to do this, you know? So
right. That is so good. That is so, like, understanding your why. And that, again, takes work. It takes time for you to calm down, to settle in, and actually think about that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I read in your bio that you are doing continuing education on mental health. Mental health is huge. And it's also one of my passions. It's like the buzz of everything. What do you think people still get wrong when they talk about mental health?
I think people on the outside looking in are getting wrong that there is a fix, that there is a end of, you know, taking care of your mental health, that you can be finished, you know, and yes, you can learn something new to apply to the next, like we were talking about before, to apply to the next trigger as you move through life. But to approach healing as if, you know, oh, there's a point where I'll be healed and whole and, you know, go on tea parties and that's fine. You know, and it's like, yeah, no, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. Mental health is a continuous self-care commitment. And I think people are getting it wrong that, you know, you can magically be fixed by some appointments or some program or, you know, anything. It's learning to self-care consistently.
Yeah, that's so good. Even if we go back to the triggers of the moment and you talk about the anxious thoughts that you have around that moment, it's not always. So it's not like you did a three-step program and you got past that. It's understanding how to deal with it when that does come up. And that's an everlasting thing.
Yeah.
That is so good. Okay. Before we go, I have one more thing that I need to know. Maya can be seen live on Instagram on your IGTV show, Ask the Widow Coach. Thursdays at noon, you guys need to tune in the show notes. I'll put all of the links in there so you can go grab it. But what is the one question you get asked the most from those lives?
Now that you're repartnered, is everything great? And, you know, the answer is everything is great because I'm great on the inside, you know, because
That is so good.
Yeah. With or without him, I was determined to be okay. So, you know, he is an amazing addition to my life. But just like, you know, they say more money, more problems. Not that he's a problem, but he introduces having a partner with kids, blending a family. It introduces new things that we have to learn and grow through. So it's an addition to widowhood. It's an addition to some things that may trigger me. And it's an addition to some things that I have to learn. So it is an expanding of my story, not the period at the end, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I love that because I think a common theme of what we've talked about today is working on yourself and understanding how to work on yourself and building that ladder to figure that out. Oh my goodness. This has been amazing. I absolutely adore you and I appreciate your time to be on this podcast. You guys go look in the show notes, join her Facebook group, be on the Instagram lives and just be part of our community. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Remember to show up for yourself unapologetically, because while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault, your life is 100% your responsibility. I cannot wait to see you soar.